Please welcome Gene Melter.
Thanks, Kirk. Good evening. Well, I was raised Catholic, and not in a half-assed way. I got it at home and for 12 years at school. So I'm in a position to tell you that Catholicism as a religion is obsessed with sex. Who's allowed to have it and under what circumstances and with whom? And who's not allowed to have it, ever? Who famously didn't have it, even though it seems like she did? And chastity is a virtue and birth control is a sin. I could go on and on. So it was a pretty big deal when I made the decision, and it was a cold, calculated decision to lose my virginity. I was 22 years old, living with my parents. I had just graduated from UCLA. This is 1982 for the historical record. And so I just graduated, and in a few weeks, I was going to enter a year of service with a group called the Jesuit Volunteer Corps. This is kind of Peace Corps-ish, but with a heavy religious slant on it. And I was going to be sent to Fresno to serve the needy and live in a prayerful community. And we were required to agree to a year of celibacy. Now, I could have just continued the celibacy I had going, but I didn't want to. I was curious, like what is all the fuss about? I wanted to know. And also, I secretly had stopped believing everything I'd been taught about sex outside of the sanctity of marriage being a sin. I had a candidate in mind, Larry, who I had met through the anti-nuclear coalition at UCLA. And we weren't really in a relationship, we weren't in love, but we had been out sort of a few times. And Larry talked a lot about himself, including his rich and varied sex life. So I felt certain that Larry would be up for this. But I didn't have much time. I needed to call Larry and proposition him. But I didn't want to use my parents' phone to do this. And I'm not just talking about, like, they couldn't be home and overhear this conversation where I'm asking this person to have sex with me. I mean that I felt it would be wrong, even if they weren't home, to use their phone in the commission of a mortal sin. And it's actually two mortal sins when you throw in the birth control. Speaking of which, now I did need to get a hold of some female birth control, and I need to make sure that Larry had his male birth control because I was not going to get pregnant. So I actually walked to a payphone a few blocks from my house to make this phone call to Larry. He was surprised, in a pleasantly surprised, because I had given him that spiel about how I was Catholic and I was saving myself for marriage and all that. So he was surprised, but as predicted, he agreed to the plan. And we set a date for the next weekend, and he said he was all set in terms of the male birth control. Now, I didn't have a source of information about female birth control. So I had older sisters who knew a thing or two, but they hadn't shared this information. My mother, of course, knew nothing. I'm pretty sure she never used it in her life. Neither did my father. They had eight children. And anyway, how could I consult her? And I'd never had a useful sex ed class. I had had sex ed in my Catholic schools. But they tell you how to make a baby, but they don't tell you how not to make a baby. So the resource I consulted was a wonderful book that a friend had given me, Our Bodies, Ourselves. And this was an amazing book. It was a feminist manifesto, as well as an owner's manual, complete with illustrations. Now, I kept this book hidden, as you might imagine. Not just hidden, but really hidden. So it wasn't just in my bureau, it was beneath my bureau. So a person would have to pull the bottom drawer all the way out to find this little compartment, you know, between the bottom drawer and the floor. That's where I kept our bodies ourselves. And then when it was perfectly safe, parents asleep and everything, I would pull it out and study it. So I studied the chapter on birth control, and I decided a diaphragm and spermicide would be the method for me for this situation, like your one-off type of situation. So, but where to get a hold of this? So, pre-internet, young people, remember. So the next day, I told my parents I needed to borrow the car to go to UCLA to take care of some business, even though I'd already graduated. And I drove like 30 miles, we lived in the valley, to UCLA. And then I went straight to the sociology department, which is my major, and to the office of the academic advisor, Sue. And I had visited Sue often the previous year, probably more often than she would have liked. And I found Sue in her office, and I sat down, and I just said it straight out. Sue, I want to lose my virginity. I need some birth control, but I have no idea where to get it. And even though it was way outside her job description, Sue was nice enough to write down the name and address of a women's clinic in Santa Monica. I drove straight there from UCLA. Now, this place was unlike any sort of medical place I'd ever been in. It was not your sterile environment with the white coats or anything like that. It was more like your granola, lesbian Birkenstock, you know, kind of place. And now I'd never had any sort of exam, but I knew what to expect from reading our bodies ourselves. And thus it came to pass that the very first person who had contact with my private parts was like a very butch middle-aged woman. And I found this encounter pretty awkward, you know, the stirrups situation. I found the whole thing kind of socially awkward. I didn't know how to conduct myself. So I just kind of jabbered away and told this perfect stranger all about my plan to lose my virginity. And she wasn't warm and friendly, and she didn't say much. She was just busy kind of trying different sizes of device inside me, because this is a Goldilocks situation. And then she finds the right one, and then she has me practice putting it in front of her and checking. So embarrassing. I was so glad to finally pay for my two products, my diaphragm, my spermicide, and get out of there. Now, they'd put them in this brown paper bag, which I then shoved into my big purse. I drove back to the valley, parked the car in the garage, went in the house, went straight to my room, and hid this brown paper bag with our bodies ourselves underneath my bureau. Phew. So a couple hours later, I'm just hanging out in my room, and I hear a little commotion in the kitchen. It's my parents talking, kind of whispering, but my dad sounds agitated, and he was a scary guy. So I got nervous, like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And so then a minute later, I hear a knock on the door, and my mom comes in. She's got a little slip of paper in her hand. And it's the receipt from the women's clinic. And she says, your father found this in the car. What were you doing in that place? And she hands the receipt to me. And I start to panic, but then I look down at the receipt and I see that it wasn't itemized. It's just the name of the clinic and the total I'd paid. Nothing about birth control at all. And then I look up at her face and I see a familiar expression, and the look she's given me is saying, lie to me. Tell me any lie you want, and I will accept it. Just give me something to tell your father. And I'm a great liar, so I say something like, oh, it's nothing to worry about, Mom. You know, I've heard that women should have an exam, and I'm 22 years old and I've never had one, so I just went and got an exam, and what turns out, everything's fine, so that's good news. Something like that. And she leaves the room. Neither of them ever brought it up again. Back to Larry. Larry thinks this should be kind of a romantic evening, even though we're not in love or anything, and we're not going to see each other again, at least for a year, probably never. And so he takes me out to dinner. Now, it's not a nice dinner. It's like a burrito or something, because Larry is poor. And he lives in Venice Beach, and then after the burrito, we go to his apartment. It's a crappy, cruddy, little, dark, dingy. But we're very relieved because his roommate is not at home. I take my brown bag into the bathroom. It's icky and unhygienic, but I do my best to get ready. I put about a cup of spermicide in that diaphragm, and I insert it, and then I check it several times because I'm an anxious person. But oddly, I'm not very anxious about the deed itself. I'm detached. I'm emotionally detached. I'm just going to get through it, just be stoic, get through it like a dental appointment. So when I emerge, Larry's already in his saggy old bed, which wasn't a real bed. It was like mattresses on the floor. And he's very cheerful, and he remains cheerful through the whole encounter, which was quick. I was quicker than a dental appointment, come to think of it. I'm just, I have no affect. I'm Spock-like, you know, through this. But he's having a good time. Then it's over, and I didn't feel much of anything. I mean, I felt like a little, no tears or anything like that. But I feel like a little shift inside me. Like now I am different. Something did happen that was kind of important. But Larry's just yakking away. He feels so good about this. He really thinks he did a great job. He tells me I was lucky to have him as my first, you know. And he says he just thinks it's so cool that he was my first, because he'd always be my first, and I would always remember him because of that. And of course, that's true. Thank you.